This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What's trending?
What's trending is presented by Baker University, where graduates earn higher salaries and land jobs faster than any other university in Kansas. Apply today at bakeru.edu. We'll talk about Vinny Pasquantino right after What's Trending and latest with his injury heading into opening day. But number one is the Sweet 16. We're down to 16 teams in March Madness. The first game of the week will be BYU and Alabama, a 2-6 matchup. That one tips off just after 9 o'clock. Some of the other games on Thursday, Maryland taking on 1-seed Florida, Arizona and Duke. The biggest surprise in the Sweet 16 is 10-seed Arkansas, their upset win against the 2-seed St. John's squad. Other than that, we've got all four number ones still alive heading into Sweet 16 Thursday and Friday.
Obviously a chalk-heavy Sweet 16. And we'll kind of see where that goes. But yeah, still there. Next up on What's Trending, the NCAA basketball transfer portal actually opens today, despite that. So some of the players you're familiar with could be on the move as of early today. This is the dumbest, easiest thing to fix in college basketball. Are you kidding? There are still 16 teams left playing basketball. Just move it 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It doesn't cost you anything to move it. This is crazy. I'm guessing that
this will get fixed.
They just didn't get a handle of
college football
of it
does
yet,
it too, though.
Yeah. And they'll do
they,
it.
They both
they need
can fix this.
Changes.
Very
there should
easily.
Be college football playoff totally. Games going while people are transferring out of their schools.
Yeah, this is.
It presents a real conflict of interest, and it gives a huge advantage to keeping your players to the teams because they might recruit other people who they can't talk to yet from these schools who can't enter the portal who are still playing basketball.
Scottie Pippen's son, who plays at Michigan, just entered the portal. Michigan, of course, is still playing.
Right, yeah. And
that's just weird.
This is an easy fix. It really is. An easy fix. They got to get it figured out. You're right. It happens in college football as well. It's also another reason why some of these postseason basketball tournaments, like this new Crown one or even the NIT, some teams are choosing not to play because they want to be able to focus in on the transfer portal, and they may not have – they know there's going to be some guys transferring out of their program. All right, elsewhere on What's Trending, we'll stick with college basketball. Drake head coach Ben McCollum reportedly expects to be the next head coach at Iowa after an unbelievable one-year run at Drake, 30-plus wins, an NCAA tournament win against the Missouri Tigers, and then a loss over the weekend to Texas Tech. Also, Sean Miller, Xavier head coach, now soon to be the next head coach at Texas. Remember, Xavier beat Texas in the first four game in Dayton, Ohio, just about a week ago. So that is the latest on the coaching carousel. So I guess we can
throw
in
Norville. right?
Nico Medved.
Medved. Now I was getting the wrong. I was like, Colorado
former,
State.
Now former Colorado State head coach. Almost got his team to Sweet 16. Of course, behind the scenes, his agent was already talking to Minnesota. Uh-huh. He will now become the next head coach of the Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Do you see who's the favorite to replace him, according to reports?
I haven't.
You'll recognize the name.
Okay.
Ali Farouk Manesh.
I like you, Gold.
That was a bit of a dig. Sorry, man.
I see.
Set you up for failure there, obviously, from the Kansas. Was that a round of 32 game? That was an 8-9.
Northern Iowa, yeah.
Yeah, Northern Iowa.
I was at the game.
Oh, you were at the game, too? Watching Farouk Manesh rain freeze?
I was with my dad. Yep.
Dang. Well, he's the favorite to take over. He's actually an assistant coach right now at Colorado State.
Yeah.
He is the favorite to become the head coach there.
Good for him.
Next up on What's Trending, Kansas State women's basketball advances to the Sweet 16 on the women's side of the bracket. The only local left playing on either the men's or women's side. It was an overtime thriller against Kentucky in Lexington. They hold on. They're awaiting their next opponent. Games continue today and tomorrow on the women's bracket side.
And don't forget, lastly, on What's Trending, not only did we get the news today that the Royals are going to remain on 96.5 The Fan on a new multi-year deal, so we're excited about that. Royals baseball right here on your home for KC Sports, 96.5 The Fan. But this Friday, we'll have our roundtable. Vern hosting the Royals roundtable with Michael Massey and Kyle Isbell out at Hollywood Casino. It starts at 6 p.m. this Friday night. There'll be a meet and greet afterwards with the players, plus everybody from 96.5 The Fan going to be hanging out as well. It'll be Sweet 16 Friday night, so a chance to... We're going to be right across from the sportsbook inside Hollywood Casino, so, you know, place a bet or two, listen to some Royals coverage, and get some insight.
Plus some meet, craps, meet you know, get a table together.
We can do that on Friday. We can do something like that. We can have a good time. 21 and older, obviously, though, to enter. Hope to see you guys Friday night. That is What's Trending here on Cody and Gold. So we didn't mention it in What's Trending, but let's talk about Vinny Pasquantino. Unfortunately, in the final spring training game, the video is now circulated. You can see it where he clearly is running towards first and has to pull up. It is a hamstring strain, which the degree of that, the grade of that, is what's going to determine how long, if at all, he's going to miss. And because it's so early on in the season hasn't started, you know they're going to be so cautious, as they should, with this. And it sucks for our guy, Vinny. But I think most likely this probably ends up with him spending some time off. Maybe a quick IL stint. Hopefully it's quick. But it's brutal because we know this is now, what would be, the third straight year he's going to end up on the IL.
Miss some time. Yeah. And look, if it's so funny because it's going to feel immediately bad if he, let's say, starts on the 10-day IL and that's all he misses. Because then you're like, oh, here we go again. But if he plays the rest of the season, the story can still change for Vinny. I don't expect him, nor do I necessarily want him to in any given season, to play 162 games. Last year, it seemed like he had finally shaken the injury bug. He was playing every day for this team. Every day in the starting lineup. No questions asked, no injuries, no shoulder stuff, no problems until the unfortunate injury that happened on the Urseg throw cost him the rest of the regular season up until the divisional round of the playoffs. But like, sometimes it just feels like you're a magnet for it. Like, I don't think he's like, he has not been injury prone in like the way a lot of people typically think about it, which is just like, you got a bad back or you got a bad knee. And those things just constantly flare up. This is a new problem, right? A hamstring-related issue. I think he's probably going to miss a little bit of time. Based on what I'm currently hearing, I don't think it's a severe strain of the hamstring. I think it's probably on the lower grade level. But I mean, I guess at this point, it's like 3 days from opening day, so I don't really know. I imagine if he thinks he can push through it, he will. But like at this point, I wouldn't risk it for the Royals. He's too important to their success to take any chances with this hamstring at all. Miss 5 games, I don't care. Miss 10, whatever. Make it retro to the, you know, like, that is a number I can handle. Just still proving to be healthy. Because he played 131 games last year. That's double what he was playing before in the other injury problem seasons, right? But he had been hurt 3 years in a row.
That's the issue, yeah.
This will be 4 if this injury lingers at all. 10 days to me doesn't constitute an injury, even if it's at the beginning of the season. A month does, right? There's like a fine line, or if you miss time, or if it's a month combined. That's probably in baseball where I draw the line of you were injured versus 162 games and it's hard to tell to play. It's like football. I don't think if you play 14 games every year, you're injury prone. I think that's just football. It's a hard sport to get through 17 games on. Baseball, I view like 140 as essentially being the marker, 140 205, 250, you know, like that being the marker of you missed a little time because baseball's hard to play 162 games.
With all the questions we still had, we spent a bunch of spring training talking about the outfield and, you know, how do they improve on offense, and they're willing to try to play Massey and these other guys at different spots in the outfield if needed, if the bats of Renfro and Melendez end up not being there. Well, now you're taking out, potentially, I guess we don't know for sure, right? If he has to miss some time, you're taking off one of the most important bats in your entire lineup. So you got to hope that it's short term. Now, Vern was on with Dusty and Fesco this morning, and they asked him, for starters, would Cags get called up if this happened?
Even if it is something that lands him on the IL to open the season, no, I don't think Jack Caglione, I don't think that we're breaking glass because of emergency on opening day. I don't think that's the most advantageous position to put Caglione in.
Yeah, I think that'd be a terrible idea. So I don't expect Cags to get called up in this circumstance, especially if it's a short-term stint. At all for Vinny Pasquantino. Let him go to the minors. Let him get better at the plate. And I know we're like, what do you mean get better at the plate? He's crushing the baseball. Sounds like maybe the curveball, you could use some work on that.
Also hasn't played
right field. This case, I know it wouldn't require him to play right field, but long term, that's if for this season, long term, I mean, if you want him to actually have a spot on this year's team, he needs to learn right field, unless you're telling me Vinny's going to be out for months.
Look, I understand the desire to have Caglione up. I also would like to watch him play Major League Baseball this year. Not arguing it, not making any, but I go back to, like, nothing's changed in the why he shouldn't do it. He's played 29 minor league games, 50 if we go ahead and give him the Fall League 2 gold. He's played 50 games inside the Royals organization. That seemed like the kind of person you just want to put in the big leagues. He's still 21, so he's still young even for a college player. So there's not like a rush or an urgency to do it. Plus, let's just call it 10 games for the sake of this argument. Just start for me at catcher. Let Salvi DH. Let Canna get an extra game or two. Or let Massey get an extra game or two. It's fine. Like, there's a way to cover. You don't change the entire development process of a player because someone might not be available for 10 to
Correct.
15 games. That's actually a really bad way to operate. Like, if Bobby Wood Jr. hadn't made the big leagues, but then a shortstop got hurt 7 games into the season, don't just change your whole plan because one injury occurred. This is why you trade for people like Canna, which existed, by the way, before the Vinny
injury. They did the move a day or two before.
But you do it because it provides you flexibility inside your own organization in case you need it. You can call Prado up. Velasquez can start a few days in the outfield as you're shuffling. Whatever you want to do, whoever's in your minor league system, I don't care if you're a big... If you think Gavin Cross is whoever you like inside your system, it's fine. It's just not him yet. Their plan has always been probably post All-Star break at the earliest for Jack Caglione, unless he goes to the minors in a month and absolutely rakes, right? Unless that occurs, not there. Plus, you know, maybe we can go see Jack play in the minor leagues. Something the show did once with Bobby Wood Jr., and it seemed like that was worth it.
Yeah.
He went over in that game, you know that?
He did. Didn't get a hit. I do not remember that. I do not remember.
Fun trip, though. Didn't care.
Yeah. No, we stay tuned on that. There's some moving parts there, but
we're trying.
We might be doing something. We might be doing something on the minor league trip.
I do want to see. I think part of this is it's really hard to keep fans down on, like, wanting to see Jack Caglione. I get it. I really do. But like, it's just too early. And I've been pro. I've told you this before. I think sometimes the Royals in the past have been a little slow with some minor leaguers who like went and they've misidentified. I don't feel that same way about this organization with JJ Piccolo in charge as I did about the previous Dayton regime, where I thought that they did hold some players down too long. It could have gotten better contribution had they taken a chance on guys who were performing. He's played 29 games at high A. It's not enough. Like, you don't have to move him through as slow as baseball teams make you think, but you don't have to just, like, put him in the big leagues and be like, sure hope. Like, unless they're Acuna or Bobby Witt Jr., some of these guys who can just fly through the system and just Tatis and just be in the big leagues at 19. It's like, how many guys are like that? How many homers would he hit if he played 162 games this year?
This year?
Mm-hmm.
28 to 30 in this first year. That's not a ceiling, obviously, but that is
first. You think year one?
In year one, knowing that he would struggle in other areas.
You think he'd be like a 30 home run guy?
Mm-hmm. Right away. And people are like, well, then why isn't he play? He doesn't have anywhere to play unless there's injuries.
And also, like, would you be fine with the 28 to 30 home runs if it was like Joey Gallo's line?
Right. Yeah, if he's hitting a buck like, 95, I'm good.
Look, here's the best news about it. I genuinely believe that Jack Caglione, I'm starting to think that his floor is Joey Gallo. That he just comes in here and hits absolute moonshot home runs.
Joey Gallo's trying to pitch these days, too. Did you see that? He's trying to go backwards.
Where his career average is 194 with a 319 on-base percentage, and he just slugs monster home runs. He hit 41, 40, 38 out of a 3-out-of-5-year run. And then that's his floor. You know what? There are worse floors. There's a reason why Joey Gallo got 10 years in the big leagues, and it's fun to watch. I would just like him to hit for a better average.
And look, I get it. Caglione's not a high school kid. I understand. He's coming out of college. He was the best player in the country. All that stuff is true. And that's why we're even talking about him potentially being up this year. So I think we can understand that, yeah, his track is much quicker than other players. But saying that, oh my gosh, we might have to wait till August, that's not like some crazy timeline. Remember, he was drafted last summer. It's not like they're oh my gosh, how could you not call him up so
quickly?
Just
holding this guy hostage in the minors forever. They just want to see him against better talent in AA. And all of this is going to be really weird.
Someone says, what if Vinny ends up being out for 15 games and the Royals are 5-10? Are you still happy without Cags? Well, I'm not happy they'd be 5-10. I don't think Jack Caglione would suddenly, with all
make
due respect,
him 8-7.
We're all excited about Caglione.
He's not a three-war player in 15 games.
In his first 15 games in his big league career, he's not going to be the difference of them being 5-10 and above 500 baseball team. No, I'm sorry. We could all be excited about the guy. We don't need to act like he's the next Hall of Fame player immediately. Come on.
I mean, it'd be cool if he was.
Sure, it would be.
It'd be cool if they had, like, he was just as good as Bobby Wood Jr. essentially as a hitter. That'd be great.
That would be great, Cody. Yes, that'd be great.
I would like that.
And I think he's going to be really, really good. It doesn't mean that in his, you're asking 29 games in the minors, and then now you're asking in his first 15 big league games that he's going to win the Royals 5 games. Stop.
I mean, I get like people's fear over the record sliding you gotta remember.
Yeah, Vinny's a huge bat. If in fact he's out, it is a massive hole in the lineup. No
question.
They'll
have to win via pitching, like a lot of teams do in April. Here's the good news. This is actually a better time to have to win via pitching. Offense is typically down, weather's colder, although it's supposed to be super nice. I don't know if anyone's
80 degrees on the Weather Channel app.
How bad is the secondary ticket market going to be if it's 78
so yes.
And sunny on Thursday?
Depending on the ticket app that you use, right now the cheapest on one site with fees, $1.89
for SRO
to get in, just for a ticket, for a seat.
Okay. Oh, for a seat. Okay.
Yeah,
that's what I was.
But that's it's $189 right now on the secondary market.
Well, it's not cheap.
Well, the team was in, as we said it last week, the team was in the playoffs last year. There's excitement around the ball club. The weather's going to be great. Why wouldn't you go out to opening day if you? Why wouldn't you? That's why it sold out quick.
Are there any seats in Crown available? You and I just sit down there. I see one available on this site, but it's only one. It's a single. I'm afraid.
How much?
Barely even worth it if it's only one. $1,100.
Oh, that's it, huh?
I mean, I'd make the most of it. I'd be there.
I found cheaper ones, Cody. Really. I found a steal. Crown Club, $900 right now, man.
A
steal.
Okay. Practically
steal.
Free at that point.
What a steal.
Practically free.
I want to talk a little college basketball for a second. We'll get to the rest of the tournament field and what we're seeing. And is it a new trend? Is it just a trend or is this a long-term thing? But in college basketball, there's some coaching movement happening. We all know the story of Ben McCollum at Drake and what
best
a story
in college
it's been
basketball probably
by
this
far,
year.
By far, not even close. He now reportedly is going to become the next head coach at Iowa. So quick. Right after, right? And we know how this game is played. His agent clearly had been talking to Iowa for a week at least as they finalize things. This is just the nature of the business. It's why Minnesota's thing hired their head coach today once Colorado State got eliminated yesterday. If Colorado State would have kept winning, we wouldn't have heard things getting finalized. It's just the nature of college basketball. Are you surprised he's going to Iowa? Like, we all figured he was getting another job when he was rumored to be linked to Indiana. Are you surprised it's Iowa? Ties to the whole state.
That's what it is. This is the perfect transition job. He's done a really good job, I'll say, in the last two. Now, look, he only stayed at Drake for a year, but you're like, how do I have success from D2? go to the Valley where you can have success immediately, bring in your players who are really good at that level and can compete at that level, and immediately drag them in, was successful at doing that. And then, because he already has a connection to the state of Iowa, is essentially recruiting in this same general area, and now actively recruiting, obviously, as he was at Drake, or bringing those guys in, he runs pretty deep in Iowa. Like, I think he was raised in that state. He played near that area. I think he got his master's and law degree, I think is what it said, from Iowa. So, like, he's an Iowa guy.
That's why, yeah.
So, like, for them, if you're Iowa, you're like, if we get this right, this might be the kind of coach who doesn't get robbed from us, right? Like, we got to find the guy who just, like, is embedded so deep that maybe they'll, you know, like Kirk Ferentz never left Iowa. They kind of like the idea of doing it. For him, I think it makes a lot of sense. You get a power conference. You're going to get more resources than you've had. Still kind of light for probably the Big Ten. More resources than you've had in an area that you're familiar with recruiting. It makes a lot of sense to me. And if he goes well here 3 or 4 years from now, a blue blood will knock. Like, if he does well here, a top 20, like we can't argue what are, but a top 20 or 25 job will emerge.
He's in a really good talent pocket, too.
Iowa?
Well, Iowa, the Dakotas, like Grant Nelson, star player at Alabama, he's from North Dakota. Like, he's in a really good pocket of basketball talent to bring in.
I think, like, Division II 11 months ago, and now you're in a Power 5 conference, nobody should be faulting him for leaving Drake after 1 year. And I know you can be bummed about it because it sucks. You had this great season and now you got to restart all over again. Yeah, that sucks. That's the nature of being a program like Drake in a mid-major. That's just the reality of how college basketball works. But you can never, I never get the criticism, whether it's a player or a coach in this case, somebody has a chance to leave for the betterment of their family to get a massive pay increase from what they were just making 11 months ago at Division II.
I couldn't find out. Now, I found out what he was making at Division II. I couldn't find out what he was making it.
At Drake? Okay. Yeah. But like at Iowa, I mean, I don't know the dollar amount either there, but I think it's safe to say $2.5 million a year at least. I could be off on that, but I don't think that's a crazy number to throw out. That's a massive increase in betterment for his family. If he has success there, you're right. He has other opportunities. If he doesn't, hey, at least you got some money. And it's not like you can't go back down and coach at a lower level eventually. Yeah. He's not that old. You know, he's a younger guy. So
still under 50.
Yeah, he's in his late 40s, I think, or some 45, 46.
Harold Kuntz tells me Ben McCollum was born in Iowa City.
Well,
so, I mean,
go.
It's like...
That's why he takes the Iowa gig. But I think there were some Drake fans that were hoping, like, okay, if he's going to leave, he's going to at least be Indiana or something. But... yeah, so if you got ties to the reason why he also probably took the Drake job is because it was in Iowa. Let's just be real.
It makes complete sense.
In a 2 year time period, making 10 times the amount of money, he was making $275,000 at Northwest Missouri State, according to an article, as the head coach, as a 4-time national champion. And you saying, let's just estimate it $2.5 million. 10 times? Mm-hmm. That's a hell of a year, man. That is a turnaround. You like double, you know, triple your salary and then just go ahead and make it 10 times.
Fran McCaffrey.
He was there a long time.
Yeah, Fran McCaffrey was their head coach for a very long time. His salary, his total compensation last year was 3.4. His base was 2.05. So I don't think $2.5 million is crazy at all.
No, that's probably it. You got to pay him if you're going to recruit him to leave Drake, a school that he already has comfort with. And you're paying for Sturts or you're paying some of the other ones, you know?
If you're looking at also just in terms of Fran McCaffrey's time in the tournament, the furthest he made it was getting to the third round. So essentially the Sweet 16, that was back in 14-15. So that, I don't know, if that's not necessarily the expectation, but...
do you think it's going to work just overall? What's your guys' guess? Do you think it'll have success at Iowa?
I think he's that good of a coach.
I do,
yeah. I think it'll work.
Now, as you said, do I think he's going to be a top 10 team in the country? I don't know about that, but eventually a consistent tournament team?
Yeah. It's also a significant style change because those Iowa teams for Fran McCaffrey, they would score 80, 90 points on a regular basis. They're going to go from
their
super
basketball
fast to really
program
slow.
Is going to turn in their football program from a stylistic standpoint.
Yeah, it's going to be the same.
Their football team is going to be boring, and their basketball team might be boring as well, but they're going to win.
But
hey,
I mean, they've made 7 tournaments in the last 12 years. Yeah. They're not like a bad program. Fran McCaffrey is actually who made him relevant.
Yeah. They're a solid program. It's just that he couldn't do anything with it where maybe Ben McCollum could. I think for the rest of the Big Ten, it's the hire that's like, it's good for the Big Ten, but for other opponents, you're like, man, we got to deal with this guy. You know?
I think if you're an Iowa alum, you love this.
You should
absolutely love the hire.
Almost no way to not like
our guy, Logan Weber, who does after hours.
Yeah.
He's an Iowa guy. And he seems fired
he
up about
be
it,
excited.
At least from what I've
well,
seen.
He was a North. Didn't he go to Northwest Missouri State?
Yeah, but he's been an Iowa fan.
Well, then it makes it even easier for him. He was at Northwest Missouri State with a guy who was winning all these championships.
Next time we next time we have Dane and Hughes on the show, we'll have to talk. Iowa Hawkeye, so we'll get his perspective on it too. Maybe we'll talk to him about that. But up next, let's talk more about the NCAA tournament. The 16 teams that are left are one thing, but how did we get here? And is this year just a trend, a fad, or is this going to be how it is? That's coming up next.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, yeah, this song is stuck in my head. Thank you very much for playing that again, Drew. All tournament week, every commercial break, it felt like, I don't know, every under eight timeout. I mean, abracadabra. I mean, just look, it's kind of a hit.
How did two people write popular songs called Abracadabra in the same year?
I know.
Her and Eminem.
It's weird. And then obviously, I thought you were just going to say, like, also way back, there was, of course, the original. It's a good song. It's catchy, and it's been stuck in my head. And thank you, Drew, for playing it again. So now I'm going to be saying this during the break and singing it during the drive home.
I didn't even notice it during the games, but you told me to roll it in. And as soon as I rolled it in, the first thing that popped in my head, I walked out of the studio and I started humming it to my, I hummed it to myself.
It's catchy.
It's crazy.
Look, Lady Gaga is very good at what she does. Perfect, because we're going to talk tournament here anyway. This song has been the song of the tournament. There's no doubt about that. And I wonder if what we're seeing in the tournament to this point is just a one-year blip, or this is the new norm. I'm referencing mainly Thursday and Friday, because I actually thought the games this weekend were pretty darn good. And now we have some really, really good matchups starting Thursday. But number one seeds, number two seeds, number three seeds, number four seeds, they all survived. And that's the first time since
2016. That's lame for a Sweet 16.
Yeah, it's the first time since 2017. So it has happened before, but first time since 2017 that we've seen this. And I think a lot of this has to do with NIL in the nature of college basketball now, where if you are an established player, I keep using this one player as an example just because he's still in the tournament, Iona, who has been in the tournament in recent years, and you have someone like Clayton Jr. who transfers out, and now he's at Florida. He's a star there, and a big reason why Florida's the number one seed. Or you have a team that would have been a player that could have been on a 14 seed team, and he transfers, and guys transferred before, but we know it's happening more. Where did all the talent for the mid-majors go? They're all in the Power Five now. I mean, that's just the reality
of the
business.
They play at the big boys' schools.
So I think this has played a huge role in the upsets. I don't know if it means like every year now we're just never going to have upsets. I don't want to go that far yet, but it absolutely has had a role, coupled with the fact this year, for whatever reason, the seeds 12, 13, 14, 15 in particular, those teams just didn't shoot the three ball well. We mentioned the stats early. College Basketball Central put them out. That only one team shot over 30% from three. That was a double digit seed, and that was Colorado State. And it's why they played Memphis, but they were a 5-12 team. And so they advanced. They almost beat Maryland yesterday. That is part of it. So I think it's a combination. One, maybe just a bad year, Cody. If you need for upsets, sometimes you need to be a underdog that has a great 3-point shooting day. But I think some of this is the NIL and the transfer portal.
Yeah, I'd like to be optimistic and just be like, you know, down here, because it hasn't been an exciting tournament. There were a couple of good games yesterday and over the weekend, right? But like three good games does not save the overall tournament of a number of blowouts. Not that many close, no upsets essentially in the first round.
Yeah.
Very few in the second round. Because that's why we got a very, very tricky. There's what, one double digit seed in the entire
Someone on the
Sweet 16 Arkansas? That's it?
Yeah, someone on the text line said St. John's got beat. Yeah, and it's not in the first round though, right? They got beat by 10 seed Arkansas.
And no offense, like if the biggest upset in your entire tournament is 10 seeded Arkansas coached by John Calipari, not the world's biggest upset, okay? That's not small school team you've never heard of. It's John Calipari. It's not, you know, it's one of the most successful coaches in NCAA history. So it's like, a limit to the amount of like, ooh, they really got St. John's this time. Like, yeah, they got him. They won. And they obviously are proven to be a pretty good team. And that's why they did it. But like the overall nature of it feels way down. Look, I'd like to think it's a blip. I hope it's a blip. Last year, there were a number of 11 seeds in the Sweet 16. That's during the NIL era.
Yeah, that's funny.
So maybe, but some of the best players in the Sweet 16 left came from smaller schools, and they would still be playing at schools like Iona if NIL didn't exist. And so like it's hard for me to not think that this is a major playing factor.
We have said Iona today more than we ever have in our life. Shout out to Iona, by the way.
Sturts will be in Iowa next year. That's more about the coach.
Yeah, look, you get the point. I think it is funny though, real quick, Drew. Last year we're talking about all the upsets and like, man, you know, there's just now we shouldn't be surprised. Upsets are just going to happen all the time. And then now we fast forward 12 months. We're like, they're never happening again. So I don't want to panic. I think that it's going to be, I think NIL is definitely playing a role. I don't think now for the next decade, we're never going to have 12s and 13s and 14 seeds when, well, we did have 12s, but we're not going to have 13, 14, 15 seeds win games.
I think it's amazing that people forget, like last year, there were two teams that made the Sweet 16 last year that were double-digit, or that were mid-majors. And that was Gonzaga, who had been on a streak of...
Again, like, that's like 16. The Arkansas example, too. It's like, ooh!
I know, but then San Diego State made it to the Sweet 16 after being a national finalist the year before, but nobody was having this conversation last year. We had Oakland. They made it, they beat Kentucky, and then they lost. But we never had this conversation last year. I don't know why that's, if it's because NC State made it to a Final Four as an 11 seed. I have no idea what it is, but it doesn't make any sense why now this is a topic of conversation when last year literally the exact same thing has
it's
happened.
It's more about Thursday and Friday, I think, than Saturday and Sunday.
Because right now the biggest upset is probably McNeese beating Clemson right now. They had guys that were playing Power 5 basketball that transferred to McNeese. And they're helping them win games. Like I think that's it's cyclical.
Yeah, where there are
guys that go from Group of Five to Power Five. There's guys that go from Power Five down to mid major, and there's coaches that we see this every year with Ben McCollum, with Nico Medved. Dusty May was a great example a couple years ago. FAU goes to the Final Four, then they make it to the tournament again last year. He goes on to Michigan. FAU nearly made it again this year without any of those guys that they lost. It's a cyclical thing.
But they didn't even make the tournament, though.
But part of the issue,
it's hard to make the tournament as a mid-major. It's so much more difficult.
But I think what I'm hearing you say, though, and this is part of the issue, is so like you mentioned, like, hey, last year there were upsets. All the upsets were from Power 4 schools. That's not what the tournament is. The tournament is guy from the Valley goes to the Sweet
16. I'm talking about for this year, mid-major schools. New Mexico, but like McNeese.
But none of them got past the round of 32.
Last year, two
did. It's not all that cool a story. But yeah, but like NC State from the ACC. Like, I'm saying like, for the tournament to work the way that it used to in the pre-NIL era, it wasn't just bad Power 4 school makes a Sweet 16 run. It was FAU. It was like the teams that
was 2 years ago.
Lower down the order. But I'm just saying, like, I think it's decreasing even more. Like, I think that because they've changed the NIL rules since then and the transfer rules, and you don't have to sit out a year. Like, even maybe some of those kids would have had to 4 years ago, right? I mean, so I just...
I do think it makes the rest of the turn. Like, now, if you look at the matchups we're going to get on Thursday and Friday, like, I think they're great. I think they're a terrific matchup. It makes the rest of the tournament good. What we like is the Thursday and Friday upsets, but the trade-off, and people will complain no matter what, but the trade-off is now we have some really, really strong matchups Thursday and Friday before we get to the Final Four.
I think that if Colorado State would have won that game, I don't know if we're even having this conversation.
I'd written it in before the Colorado State game. But
this wasn't a convo based off of yesterday. Literally, on my Saturday show I do on Odyssey Infinity Sports Network, literally our lead topic on Saturday after Thursday and Friday's games was this very conversation we're having. So it was more about the Thursday, Friday. I'm not disagreeing with you about the end result of who's in the Sweet 16. I'm just saying on Thursday and Friday, what do people love? The casual fan, right? They want the buzzer beaters. Sure. They want the drama at the end. They want the upset. And we didn't have it this year. And we're just trying to figure out, is it just a this year thing? Or is this going to be what we know? I'm semi agreeing with you that I don't think now every year we're just never going to see upsets. But I do think the NIL era of college basketball has absolutely played some role into why there are starting to be fewer. Because, yes, there were some last year, Thursday and Friday upsets. But I don't think last year was a normal year either. Right. Like if we're just going across the board, like this has happened in 2017 before NIL. But prior to that, I think it was 10 years before that. So I'm trying to figure out, is this a once every 8 to 10 year thing? Or is this now going to happen more frequently every 3 years? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was the first time since 2007 in which all Sweet 16 teams are from a power conference in some way, shape or form.
Yeah,
I think it's more of an outlier, but I just don't understand why we're not having the conversation. While we're having the conversation now as compared to last year, because the one team that was more of an underdog was the San Diego State team from last year. They lost by 30 points to UConn in the Sweet 16, and nobody was talking about, well, they didn't belong there in the first or anything like that when they were technically the mid-major school that was making these runs. I'm not saying that the double-digit seeds can't go on runs, because we've seen that with Syracuse previously and with NC State. It's just regarding the mid-majors themselves, they utilize the portal. Like the portal for them is just as important as it is for any of the major conference teams that utilize them because of the players.
They lose their stars.
They
always got players from bad Power 5 or Power 5 players that were struggling, but now they lose their stars too.
Grand Canyon had 6 Power 5 transfers to their school. Their entire starting five was from Power 5 schools, and they started and they made the tournament. So I think it depends on who you look at, but it's a cyclical thing where there's guys that don't work out at Michigan and Gonzaga and other places that go down to the St. Mary's of the world and to the Grand Canyons and whoever, and they find success. Like McNeese had a guy that was great, their leading scorer transferred from Providence.
But I would say, like, I guess my argument is I'm not arguing against that point. You are correct. I'm saying that part of the system has always existed.
Correct.
Even before NIL, that's how it worked. You didn't do well, you didn't get minutes at Michigan, and then you went to go play at a smaller school. But the problem is those schools used to also get to keep their best players in addition to that, and now they lose their best players in addition to that. I don't think it's like a two-way street. I think they get to keep the flow of talent down like they had before, but the flow of talent up is worse than it used to be. It kind of creates a bit of an issue. But again, Gold, you're right. It's more about how often it's going to happen. Do I think there'll never be another mid-major team in the Sweet 16? No, obviously I do not think that that's going to be the case. But like, does it happen a lot more frequently than it used to versus every 10 years or every, you know, is it every 3 years where it's just like chalk, all the good teams are good and nobody else matters? Because that'll just make it feel a little less hollow.
Random question, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Sorry.
My
random
bad.
Question.
I had to make sure that I had it pulled up. I loaded in all the hotkeys. It's easier
you
now.
You should have said
it.
Abracadabra. Would have been broken it all out perfectly.
Yeah, correct.
For all of us.
Any of the abracadabra songs. Any of them. You know,
was it Steve Miller?
Question
was
day.
It Steve Miller Band or whatever? Or whatever. Yeah.
Random question of the day brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Results every week and then receive free support for life. Online at awaken180weightloss.com. For you, Gold. For you, Drew. On the text line, 913-586-7965. You can hit us up on YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, Facebook. We live stream all 4 hours of the show. You could have missed the peekaboo moment earlier. For some reason, you weren't subscribed to see that great information. We'll get back to maybe a mock draft later in the week.
Uh-huh.
The question I have for you today is whether or not a team should have stuck with a branding mistake.
Okay.
Over the weekend, the Chesapeake Bay Sox launched a brand update minutes after doing what a lot of minor league teams do, right? Make something regional, make it fun, make it local. They realized the error of their ways. They released a logo that said, "We are the Oyster Catchers," and then a logo that is a baseball mitt with an oyster and a baseball in it. Now, if you have not seen this photo, and I assume some of you have not, it very closely resembles a part of the female anatomy. And so once people immediately saw it, they were like, oh God, we better pull this immediately, and did, but it was too late. The internet had already found it, and it still exists in this world. The question I have for you is, now that they've seen what people have said about it, should they just stick with it and sell as much merchandise as humanly possible, or do you have to like play it classy and avoid doing this?
No, you got to stick with it. I also think I saw what they have decided to do, and I think this is smart. They said, quote, if we're going to go viral, let's make it count. They have now said that with some of the proceeds, they're going to raise some money to a great cause. This is how you flip it. This is how you do it.
Smart.
It said, quote, some of you saw an oyster. Others saw something unexpected in our alternate identity oyster catcher's patch. We won't unsee it either. We see an opportunity to turn laughs into meaningful, positive impact. In celebration of Women's History Month, they announced 10% of all Oyster Catchers merchandise sales will support a nonprofit dedicated to cervical cancer education and advocacy.
Very
so this is
smart.
How, this is how
Very
you flip it around. Smart. So yeah, now that they're going to raise it for charity, this is how they're allowed to keep the logo and keep everything.
You say, hey, look, 10% we're helping raise awareness for cervical cancer.
Yep.
Please, and look, I guess what's crazy is this is like, how many, like for a level of like,
somebody else had to have noticed this. It's the same thing with the MLB hats.
How many layers does it have to go through before someone's like, hey man, I don't know how to put this gently, but
it's similar to the MLB hats that have been so bad. We're like, how did nobody at New Era notice that these hats spell out blank? And yet they got approved to sell. How did nobody?
How
the answer is,
Texas
how did the owner of whoever owns the company that owns this minor league team, not the affiliate, but the company that owns this minor league team, you said Chesapeake Bay or whatever it is. How did somebody in their marketing department or the president of that not be like, this.
I guess like, is it just like rubber stamping? Like, yeah, looks good, Steve.
Or they're just like, oh, you know what? We know it's going to be this, but we like it. We're going to get attention for our franchise.
I honestly think it was a genuine mistake. I think what happens here is one of these, Gold. You're the person, let's say,
order some of this stuff for the garage sale?
Sure.
And resell it?
Say, for the we could raise charity too. Help them with a charity, then help a charity that we support.
Someone wants us to get some of these hats for the garage sale.
I'll use the show fund and I'll buy a couple of Chesapeake Bay Sox hats. That's fine.
Hats or t-shirts.
I guess for like, for one at this level, I'm going to guess it only goes through like maybe five hands, right? The general manager of the AA team, the graphic designer who did it, and a couple of other people. So five people. I guarantee you one of those five was like, that looks like a vagina. And then they were like, I can't say that. That's going to make me seem like a creep. Like, I'm going to seem crazy for thinking that, so I'm not going to be the person who says it. So the one person in the five who should have caught it did, Gold, but was too afraid to speak up and be like, hey, guys, I think we need to look at this logo.
I'm on their site, man. I click on the Oyster Catchers collection, and it's not there yet. It's still got the old stuff. So
they're probably working out
they're going to need more gear, man.
Well, maybe they sold out. They had to like get it down there really quick.
Yeah, I click on it, and there's no new logo.
Oh, not available? Is there other versions of their logo available?
Yeah, but the other versions stink. It's just the other version's just like some bird on a thing.
A bat, it appears.
Yeah, on a bat. That'd be
kind of looks like a stick, but it does appear to be a bat. So you don't think? Well, look, man, they're going through some stuff. They had to. Do you know how quickly they took it down? Like, if you click on caps, it says, "Sorry, there are no products available, like of any kind." They're just like, we can't be living this life. They've got to figure it out before they do it. Is there any part of the major league club that doesn't want to be a part of this? The one they're associated with?
That's the Orioles.
Did the Orioles not want to be a part of this?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
What do they care? It's fun. People should like funny things. And if you're a minor league team, that's why there's all kinds of, like, there's the trash pandas, right? Minor league teams do this all the time. The Savannah Bananas exist in gimmick form for a good reason.
Right. Text line. Jeez. 913-586-7965. You know we can't read some of these.
You know we can't read any of those.
We can't read those on the air. I mean, I'm getting a good chuckle out of them. I appreciate them, but we can't. You know we can't read those.
I'm pretty sure we're not allowed to.
No, why? Well, definitely not.
But I don't want to say for sure.
If we can buy some t-shirts from them, we will. But right now we can't.
The second the new logo is up, I will happily do it. You know, like for, what is it, Omaha for like the 1 week always does, they're the Runzas.
Oh, yeah.
For like the 1 week, right? This is kind of part of it. I honestly, though, as quickly as they got it down, I think it was a genuine mistake. I think they thought, because it's got a kind of a clip arty feel to it. It's like clip arty baseball, clip arty oyster.
We've established something on this show recently. if there's anybody on this show that can find a logo that looks like the female anatomy, it's Cody Tapp.
Is there another one?
You brought up the you think the college football playoff trophy and logo.
Yeah, that's ruined the whole thing.
It's ruined it for Drew.
Really?
He can't look at that logo the same ever again because of it. He can't unsee
it's
it.
It's not the first thing that pops into my head because it's just the logo, but I do remind myself
that I said
whenever
that
I
once?
See it that mm-hmm. yes, that once was said on this show.
That wasn't even planned. I just brought that up naturally mm-hmm. versus this. All right, so we all agree. Stick with the original.
Well, they're going to raise money for charity. So now this is how you do it. You know, that's the perfect way to do it if you're the Chesapeake Bay Sox. So now hopefully they raise a ton of money for cervical cancer research and they can have some fun with the logo.
Drew, do you have, I'm just curious, I feel kind of bad. What do you think exactly happened to your NCAA bracket? We obviously did a bracket pool here on the show.
I think it's simple to
and
explain.
And you are 10th.
It was really bad.
You are 10th from the bottom?
Yeah.
How about this? Walk me through your process. How'd you go about to? Because you were doing, I think, like legitimate research. Walk me through your process. Where did your process go wrong?
The only, if you want to call it research, what I do is normally like CBS will like, I'll look at the resumes, compare them a little bit. I'll look at injury, you know, different things into injuries and stuff like that.
Look at all these X's on his bracket. Okay?
In terms of the, in terms of like the eye test as well. If it's like I go with my gut sometimes. Like Louisville, I just felt like Louisville was talented enough. They were ranked up high. I knew that Creighton was obviously very good.
You thought they were underseeded, I believe.
I thought they were underseeded. Yeah. I felt like they'd be able to win the matchup. I knew it would be a good game, but I thought that Louisville would be able to win that one and they could go on that run. Obviously they didn't. And that kind of screwed things up as well.
So looking at the bracket,
Gonzaga, Clemson also was a tough loss early on.
You have a possible 127 points remaining, 28 picked right. And there's some teams you're guaranteed to finish above. I think our bottom five listeners for the bracket right now, Andrew B, Rams G, who has a possible 74 points. That's going to be the worst bracket, I think, in the entire thing. Josh A, and then Tyler D. And then on the flip side, the top five in our bracket, shout out to listener Steve W, 42 picks right, max points 180, has Houston winning. Same with Jacob E. Daniel P and Jake R are in third. We also have Philip B. And then there's a bunch of you in sixth place, including Carrie S. in 181. Cody, you and I think we could
have the 200s. I didn't have a good run.
We could have maybe a respectable finish depending on our final four. I don't know. I'm tied for 102nd, 170 possible points remaining. I do have my final four intact. That's what's maybe going to save me and give me a respectable finish. But yeah, you're two. Where are you?
Two something. The only thing that helps me is. The only thing that helps me is seven of my eight Elite Eight and all four of my Final Four are still alive. So, like, I've done a horrible job picking every other game except, hypothetically, all the, like, high-seeded teams
This weekend is going to shake up the standings big time because, obviously, if you have your Final Four left, you're getting a ton more points now for the rounds moving forward.
Remind me, who's your Final Four?
Remind me, too. Texas Tech, Duke, Auburn and Houston, I think. Yeah.
Okay. I couldn't remember. Drew, who was your Final Four? Wisconsin was one of them.
Yep. Florida, Texas Tech, and Tennessee. I still have three of the four Final Four. I still have, I believe, six of the Elite Eight or seven of the Elite Eight.
That's better. God, you did even worse at picking the regular games than me if you still got. I would have thought you would have lost a different Elite Eight team just based on the
I lost. So I lost Gonzaga and I lost Gonzaga, Wisconsin. So I've got five of the Elite Eight, actually. Okay. Three of the Final Four.
That does make sense. Left. I had 3-1 seeds in Kentucky, so it's not like, you know, I'm going to need it to keep going pretty chalky in order to do it. I will say Duke just looks like a juggernaut.
Awesome, don't they?
I did not pick them to win the championship. I picked Florida, but like.
And I think it happened. Obviously,
I'm watching Duke play right now. I don't know that was not a horrid mistake.
Crazy things can happen, but yes, I did not feel worse about Duke winning. That's for sure after what I watched.
I don't know what you would.
But yeah. Someone says they have 53 possible as their score. They're cooked. Oh, yeah, our buddy Cameron. Actually, Cam S. I know who you are, but that's going to be the worst score. He can only get 53 the rest of the way.
Dude, that's tough.
Should we offer a prize for whoever's last?
Like a toilet bowl prize?
Yeah, we should. Like, moving forward, if we do this
next
again,
year. We can't announce it now because somebody would have purposely picked. Yeah. No, it's called the toilet. You've ever done it for fantasy football, the toilet bowl?
I am in one fantasy football league, and that is the Cody and Gold League.
Cam, you must not have anybody in the Sweet 16, like one team.
That's really. That's
he went all upsets. He was hoping for chaos. chaos.
Yeah, it was a bad year for that.
Yeah, if you were a chaos bracket guy this year, it did not go great.
All right, up next, guys, we're going to get to the 1 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. We'll talk more about a couple moves the Royals did make and the latest on the Royals stadium front next.